Welcome back to the Roundtable on a frigid Monday morning. 9:13 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Boy, it's cold out there. Our panel today is lobbyist and consultant Libby Post. Hello, Libby.
Hello, Ray.
And communications specialist Teresa Bourgeois is here. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, good morning.
And then strolling in like Bob Hope on a cameo appearance on The Tonight Show, it's Alan Shartok, just sitting down now. How you doing there, Uncle Alan?
I'm good. I came over through West Stockbridge this morning very early, around 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was 1 degree, which really ticked me off.
Why?
Well, because if it's going to be 1, it may as well be 0. I needed that 0 to sort of reaffirm how cold it was.
No, it's cold.
Yeah. You don't need to worry.
I went for a run yesterday. Oh, my goodness, it was so cold, and even colder today.
Yeah, well, no, you can't. You have to be very careful.
You go. You run.
I do.
So you're one of the crazy people who go out regardless of the weather?
Regardless. Well, no, not when it's icy. I don't run when it's icy, but otherwise.
Far too cold for that. You run in place inside, right? Oh, turn the radio on?
I've done it.
You need that fresh air, but it was a little too fresh yesterday.
I've done it. I've run in hotel rooms.
Yes, you know, I've run in hotel rooms as well.
That's funny.
And, the email address is panel at WAMC.
That was a sexual reference.
Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Disturbing news breaking on Friday afternoon. The Iraq War veteran accused of fatally shooting 5 people and wounding 6 at a crowded Florida airport baggage claim is due today for his first court appearance. Esteban Santiago is scheduled to be in Fort Lauderdale Federal Court this morning. 26-year-old from Anchorage, Alaska, faces airport violence and firearms charges that could mean the death penalty if he is convicted. The initial hearing is likely to focus on whether Santiago has a lawyer and setting future dates. He's been held without bail since Friday shooting at Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport. The FBI says Santiago flew on a one-way ticket from Alaska to Florida with a handgun in his checked bag, which was okay. Agents say he retrieved the gun and emerged from an airport bathroom firing. The FBI says it's aware of the video. I don't know if you've seen the video from TMZ.
Yes.
But there was a video that appears to show the gunman pulling out his weapon and shooting travelers in the baggage claim. Not quite sure how TMZ got a hold of this, but it's been shown on CNN and some of the cable networks, assumed to be an actual video of the event. The FBI agent who interrogated Saddam Hussein for months is leading the investigation into this, and I don't know what we can say about this except that it was horrific.
Well, it was horrific. A couple of things. One, it clearly shows, once again, the relationship between some mental illness. I want to be very careful about how I say this because I don't want to, you know, stereotype everybody who's mentally ill, but some mental illness and the ability to get a hold of guns. Now, let's assume for a second that this guy, and I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and I can't tell you, but here's a guy who's hearing voices. I think that's clear now. He said so, and therefore may well be schizophrenic and or some other serious diagnosis. And yet in this country, there's really not a big problem. Now, this is a guy who walked back into the FBI headquarters, told them that he was in real psychiatric trouble and otherwise, told them, and they took his gun, and then he came back and got the gun back. Now, somebody's going to have to answer for that, I suspect. I really don't know what the big issue is about being interrogated by one of the best FBI men in the country, because we know who did it. We have the film, we have the thing, but the bigger social issue of who gets guns in this country and background checks is so important.
And the cuts to mental health services play a big role in this, because this guy went to the FBI for mental health counseling, not the best place to go. You know, he needed to be seen by somebody. He needed to be in a program. They did put him in for like 3 days, and then he got out.
Well, as I understand it,
hospital, he got out. And, you know, these are the kinds of folks that need real concerted, individualized mental health help. And they're not getting it.
Well, it's hard enough to begin with, Libby. We've all known people who have major problems like schizophrenia who are what we call treatment resistant.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even do anything. But are you right that we should have these facilities? Yeah. I'm sorry, Ray. We interrupted you.
Well, as I understand the timeline of events, the FBI, he walked into the FBI, said, "I'm hearing voices." Now, the FBI, they're making sure that he is not terrorist-related or otherwise. And then they handed him off to state and local police, who said, okay, I think you have to go into a psychiatric hospital and we got to check you out. So I don't believe this would be on the FBI's...
Correct. And held for as long as they could hold him in a psychiatric center. And then they held his guns for a long time. But he hadn't been, quote unquote, mentally adjudicated. So you cannot keep their guns unless that's the case. But this is an Iraq war veteran who, by reports from his family and friends, was a very
totally
fine, young, quiet young man until he, quote unquote, you know, changed over and over again. They say when he came back from Iraq, he was a changed person.
Yeah.
And, you know, the issue here is the availability of mental health services, the immediate availability. There was an interesting Kaiser Family Foundation study on mental health care professional shortages. And I checked Alaska, where he was living. Only 24.6% of the need is being met in Alaska in terms of, because there's a shortage of, so it's not only a financial resource question, it's are there professionals available? And nationwide, the shortage is just under 50%. So you
how do you quantify that? How do you quantify the need?
Well, you find out how many people have asked for the service and don't get it.
Demand versus available professionals, healthcare professionals. And you know, you see this with a lot of Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans coming back needing help, PTSD needing help, and there's just not the immediate access to the care that people need. And you know, this is, interestingly, it's the six-year anniversary of Gabby Giffords, congressman, being shot. That person definitely needed mental health. Newtown, that person, mental health issues. You know, guns and mental health issues are just a toxic and deadly mix, and the country's got to figure it out.
And now the Trumps want silencers to become legal again. I mean, you know.
Donald Trump Jr. this week.
Yeah, yes.
Why don't we allow everybody to carry into a classroom, for example?
Yeah, right.
We know that.
Right. So, I mean, the NRA will probably say, well, if everybody at the Fort Lauderdale airport had a gun, this guy would have been killed. And I'm sure there would have been even more casualties if that was the case.
Well, I'm not sure how silencers would have affected anything in Fort Lauderdale.
No, but, you know, you bring a silencer into this guy had a silencer on his gun, right? He could have killed a lot more people because people wouldn't have known what was going on. The noise really does, you know, alert people to a gun being fired. If he had a silencer, he could have kept going and hit more people.
And I think, too, if your primary focus on the issue of guns is to focus on silencers and those kinds of things, it shows the direction you're heading in around these complicated issues. These issues are complicated because people should be able to have guns to hunt and such. And Yeah, that's this mental health issue. What do you think, Alan?
Well,
how do you handle it? It's a complicated issue, the mental health issue and guns.
Well, first of all, there's a lot to be said here. First of all, we have a lot of mental health providers in our region, so in no way do I want to in any way deprecate their substantial efforts for what they do. But we're still, you know, in an infancy in this area. We still have a lot that we have to learn about what makes the mind work. And therefore, even if you had sent somebody to a trained mental health facility, you don't know what would happen. I was struck, Teresa, though, by the conversation that I read in the paper about a young woman who he had tried to help and said, why don't you go into the Army? That way they'll pay for your... they'll pay for your education. It's a good thing, and the Army needs good people. She failed by 2 points. He encouraged her to go back and to do some more work, and she passed and she got in. But when he got back, I think she passed, but when he got back, he looked at her and he said, don't ever go in. I saw some terrible things over there.
We have to take a quick break here. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, if you want to weigh in. It's the roundtable panel today. Teresa Bourgeois, Libby Post, and Alan Chartok. Ray in for Joe today. We'll be back. Welcome back to the roundtable on WAMC 924. Ray Graff in for Joe. It is the roundtable panel with Alan Chartok, Libby Post, and Teresa Bourgeois. You can always weigh in on anything we're discussing. If you keep it brief and rather pithy, it is a panel@wamc.org. Panel@wamc.org. We have
one. Okay, here it is.
Right.
Dear WAMC roundtable panel, explain to me that a 4-ounce tube of toothpaste gets confiscated, but guns are allowed on planes. This makes no sense. No gun should be allowed on any plane. I'm with that.
Well, apparently, and I don't know the details, but this was a checked...
This is a checked bag.
And it was said, I have this gun.
Yes.
I'm a military veteran. I have this gun. I have a right to have this gun. Here it is.
Well, you're
and
allowed
it was a
to
park.
Check.
Yeah.
It was a park.
Right, and you're allowed to check your
guns
as long as it's underneath and the ammunition.
Yeah, you can't bring it onto the plane.
Right.
Well, what Philip is saying, however, is wouldn't it be better if no one was ever allowed to bring a gun onto a plane?
Yes.
That's it.
That would be realistically difficult.
How so?
For law enforcement personnel and military personnel.
Okay,
and
then you
others.
Put a comma and you say, except if you're law enforcement personnel. Or
somebody, you know, they can ship it if they want the gun at the other end.
You keep saying hunters, and I don't want to start up, but, you know.
I'm just...
But if Alan wants to bring a gun on a plane, I think it's going to be a little more difficult.
I saw Bambi at a very young age, and I've never had anything.
And you've been in love ever since.
Well, no, I thought of the tragedy of shooting that poor kid.
Yes, her mom.
The mom, yeah.
Right.
Really?
I'm...
This is where we are now on the show?
What do you mean, really?
Okay.
I mean, I understand what you're saying.
That's the most... That, I have to tell you, I've seen a lot of movies since that time. And that's the scariest I ever saw.
Well, having spent a couple of years working in Boston on anti-violence issues, I have very strong feelings about guns. So,
yeah.
Good
for you.
Yeah. But I think we really need to have a serious conversation in this country about guns. But it seems the starting point with this administration is adding silencers.
Well,
so.
We're not going in that direction, that's for sure.
I
mean, how can you allow, somebody to go into a school in Sandy Hook and kill those beautiful little children? And not then that doesn't make a difference. You know, Governor Cuomo, I suspect, knew that. That's why he did his gun act in New York State right after Sandy Hook. And, you know, how can anybody not respond to that message? But I watch our wonderful Elizabeth Esty, who's the congresswoman over there. She told me the other day that Trump got more votes in her district than anybody. She's done God's work on this thing, but nobody listens.
Well,
President Obama says that was one of the toughest days when he was in office. But you know, how many more incident after incident after incident? The carnage is everywhere, and it's those are the headline ones. But day after day after day, how many people a day are shot? It's just unbelievable the number of people killed.
So now we're going to hear from all those people who are going to say, people don't guns don't kill people. People kill people. Yeah, well,
right.
You know, if you have a gun, it's a lot easier to kill somebody. And also, how do you, as we've started this conversation, how do you deal with who is allowed to own a gun? They don't even want that.
Well, I mean, the gun advocates, and we will get emails from them.
Oh, I suspect so.
Will say, you know, this is an illegal gun problem, and this is a problem of gun laws that are already on the books not being enforced.
Actually,
that's
it was a legal problem.
Give them resources to enforce. I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to step on you there, Teresa. But no question, this was legal. The guy was legal in every sense of it.
Right. He had his license or whatever it is. You know, the fact is that some media outlets, Fox News and others, have been pounding this clarion call for eight years, if not more, that the Democrats want your guns. They're going to take away your guns.
And they use it to raise money.
They use it to raise money. They use it to embolden candidates.
Well, you're a Democrat. You would take away guns, right?
They use it to scare people.
And who put
I want gun control.
And who put five generals in the cabinet?
Right. And who's got lots of generals coming into the cabinet, the boys who love their guns. I mean, you know, this is a public health issue in this country because guns are impacting our ability to live our lives. Yet the Republicans in Congress have banned the NIH for doing any kind of gun control research because they don't want the facts to come out.
Right.
Where do we go from there?
And you don't need an AK-47 to go deer hunting. You just don't. They don't use AK-47s to hunt deer. So the notion that hunters need these weapons. I mean, you can have sensible, as Gabby Giffords, moderate to conservative Democrat, you can have sensible gun control.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you cannot get the votes in Congress to say that people who are on the watch list, who can't, the no-fly watch list, can carry guns. It just doesn't make sense.
Our email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Libby Post is here, and Teresa Bourgeois, and Alan Shartok. And we will take a brief break for BBC News, and then we'll shift gears. It's the Roundtable Panel on a very chilly Monday morning. Bundle up. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's 9:34 on Monday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable Panel. Our right-wing think tank today is Libby Post, Teresa Bourgeois, and Alan Shartok.
That was a dig, wasn't it, Ray?
No, yeah. Not necessarily.
Oh, yeah, that was a hit.
The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Before we get to the next topic, Big Al, what do we have as far as the emails go?
Well, I told you, and I know I regret this every time I say it, that my mom told me, never let anybody call you Al.
Now, why? Why?
She thought it was a deprecation of the formal Alan.
A diminutive.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
She did. And then I get all these letters, Dear Al, but Dear Big Al, you know, all this kind of stuff. Dearest panel and Ray.
Well, I am the host. I'm not
Ray,
on the panel.
Ray, great to hear your voice. Love you all. Thank you, Alan, for inspiring people of all ages to fight the hard battles for the greater good and humanity. And that's from Hazmat Mike. And Richard says, where did he get the ammo? Gun could not be loaded when checked. Well, that's true. It was in the same...
He went into the bathroom.
Yeah.
And he loaded
got
it.
His bag, went into the reportedly went into the bathroom and put his gun back together, loaded it, and came out and started shooting in the baggage claim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Okay, and Jeffrey says, I am completely with you regarding the gun and mental health issue. Just one point, silence is decreased sound, but not significantly, generally from 165 dB to 135 dB. Still very loud. Of course, they should still be illegal or very hard to get regardless. Keep up the good work. Going to be a challenging 4 years. And Barbara says, even with the proper treatment, you cannot control whether a person continues to take their medication. That's true. That being said, we are now about to defund the Affordable Care Act.
Exactly right.
We are about to force religious registration, and yet we still fight against gun control and allow those on watch lists and with mental illness to carry guns, ? Narcissa takes me to great task, although unfair. Thank you. Although unfairly, because I made it clear I was not a mental health diagnostic.
You did say that.
And I didn't know, but just want to make a note, hearing voices does not automatically mean one is schizophrenic. Correct. Schizophrenic is a specific disease, not a catalog of symptoms. The man was an Iraq war veteran, very likely had head trauma. You know that? And as we've come to learn recently, the mental illness could have come from the physical damage as well as the emotional damage of the war, or obviously a combination. Part of a better mental health care in this country is speaking of it correctly. I did.
His job was to try to clear IEDs.
Yeah, 1-800.
No, that's the fun drive. We'll do
that
later.
Why did I do that?
So, well, the fun drive is in a month. That's why.
It's coming up.
Yeah.
And by the way, anybody wants to put anything in the lockbox, it would be welcome.
It's a good time to do it.
Yeah.
You go to WAMC.org, right?
That's where you do it.
And you feed the lockbox there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Panel, whenever anyone applies for a gun license, they must sign a release for the local authority to access their mental health records. If they refuse to sign, no license. Well, I think it's a matter of state by state, isn't it, that these laws exist. Jeff says, the gun was checked, dear panel. The gun was checked. He collected his luggage, took the gun out, loaded it, and started shooting.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Lately, terrorists have been driving trucks into crowds. Let's ban trucks. Oh, brother. So that they can't drive them into crowds. And while we're at it, let's ban hammers and screwdrivers and knives. But I'll tell you one thing. A gun could kill a lot more people than one person with a knife at the same time, although mm-hmm. they can do a lot of damage.
But not as much as a truck.
Right. So are you for banning trucks, Ray?
No, absolutely not. I like trucks very much. Okay. I want to go on the record as saying that.
You're pro-truck.
I'm very pro-truck.
It's so,
not to be confused with pro-Trump.
Right.
The people at fault, says Jeff, in this one, are the law enforcement officials in Alaska who gave him back the gun after he walked and confessed to hearing voices.
They legally could not continue to hold the gun, as I understand it.
When I came around the corner and see three people firing guns, one of the original perpetrator and two citizens responding, how am I supposed to know who's the bad guy before I start shooting too?
Okay.
The problem needed to be dealt with before you get to the point where in your baggage claim with a gun in your hand.
Specifically, what does gun control mean to you? I don't know, but I'll, like the guy said on the Supreme Court about obscenity, I'll know it when I see it.
Well, let's look at some of the other countries in Europe or Japan. People don't have guns. They don't have access. And there's no gun violence.
And gun control isn't the only answer here, but it should be part of the conversation. Certainly access to mental health services, support for families of veterans and others, you know, who are suffering from PTSD. You know, there's a whole layer of issues here that needs...
Susie writes somewhat of a puzzling letter to me. Hi, who is responsible for educating the public about the facts? Do you think you might have the best platform for doing that? Why don't you do it? What are you afraid of? What do you think we do here? Hello.
Hello.
Can someone on the panel speak about the rule which allows guns and checked baggage? I wonder why, other than the obvious situation where someone is traveling to a hunting trip, or it's a law enforcement person, or is perhaps going to a marksmanship event. Why does anyone need to travel with a gun? It seems to me that anybody could do what this man did by going to the men's room and loading the weapon once he had retrieved his luggage. I don't understand the rule, and perhaps someone could explain it to me. Thank you from Maureen. And Elio says, we should, this is a little bit strange, his letter.
Okay.
We should not be asking the veteran to allow, carry a weapon after turning himself the feds after having terroristic thoughts or being admitted for treatment, question mark. Ladies and gentlemen, when you send your letter, before you hit send, could you just.
Proof it.
Check.
Right.
Edit.
Proof,
that's a good
edit.
Idea.
Yeah, check.
Our email address, if you want to send your proofed and checked letters, it's panel at...
Of how many characters?
You say 140, but it's an email. I ask is that you keep it concise. Don't ramble on and on. We do that here on the program. We don't need any script for that. Just keep your letters very, very concise, and it's panel at WAMC.org. Well, it's all over the news. President-elect Donald Trump is firing back at Meryl Streep, who made the Republican a big topic of her speech at the Golden Globes last night when she got her Lifetime Achievement Award. Without mentioning Trump by name, Streep called out the Republican's performance on the campaign trail in which he flailed his arms and appeared to mock a disabled New York Times reporter. She said Trump's actions, quote, kind of broke my heart. In a series of tweets this morning, Trump called Streep one of the most overrated actresses in Hollywood and a Hillary flunky who lost big. He also said he wasn't mocking the reporter. Streep's remarks drew backlash from some conservatives, even from Trump critic Meghan McCain, who tweeted that Streep's speech was, quote, why Trump won. And I know you have all been talking about this morning. It's even on the BBC this morning. So, all right, let's get to that before we get to other things.
Teresa, I know you had some thoughts on this.
So my thought is that Donald Trump, first of all, cheers to Meryl Streep. But second of all, Donald Trump has succeeded once again in changing the conversation and focusing it on Meryl Streep. And so as we go into this very busy week with his nominees for cabinet, and when he's supposed to talk about his own conflicts of interest, instead of focusing on his conflicts of interest, we're focusing on Meryl Streep. And he, you know, is... questioning. He obviously made fun of the reporter.
Oh, God.
I watched that tape 5 times.
He obviously made fun of the reporter. Really, but what he succeeded in doing is using this Meryl Streep's comments to change the conversation and focus on her now in the news cycle as opposed to focus on his conflicts of interest.
With all due respect, you can't blame Trump for this. BBC's covering it, CNN is covering it, all the cable, we're talking about it because she said it. This is not, it would have been spoken regardless of whether he tweeted.
But his tweet will magnify it.
Right.
And what does it say about a leader who takes the bait?
Right.
I mean, that's the other question here. What does it say about the incoming president of the United States who takes the bait by coming out and doing exactly what she said was the problem, which his response is to denigrate her.
But isn't there something else going on? There are other things he wants to get us away from. For example, these nominations that are going to go up before the Senate without the necessary evaluations having taken place. Right. And also, doesn't he have some problems, Teresa, in terms of some explaining to do about people who didn't get paid for his hotel?
Right. Well, the newest reports on his conflicts of interest and financial problems are that he owns this post office hotel in Washington, D.C., and It was reported this weekend that he had three or four liens on the property because he didn't pay the electricians the full amount of family-owned business. He owes them millions of dollars. He didn't fully pay the plumbers who did the work and others. And so yet again, here's a case where he has contractors who he's not paying. Now, he claims he's going to have a press conference on Wednesday. His first press conference since, was it June or July?
Well, it won't happen. He said last week he was going to talk about how much he knew about all the hacking.
Right.
It may have never happened.
But he still has not set, the contract for him to run this hotel, the language of the contract clearly suggests that he needs to divest himself of this hotel before January 20th. And so is he going to announce on Wednesday that he's going to do that? Because it is... Just owning it is a potential conflict mm-hmm. of interest, and that's just the beginning of the issues.
Because the Saudi princes are lining up to stay in the hotel?
Shifting up from other hotels to that hotel, yes. Absolutely right. And so he has conflicts of interest. His nominees have conflicts of interest. And that's not even getting to the issues, you know, the policy issues. And they have, and now I know we're shifting conversation here away from Meryl Streep, but they haven't even begun. I mean, they are loading all of these events onto Wednesday. So on Wednesday, you're going to have five nominations.
Right. The hearings actually begin tomorrow. Jeff Sessions for Attorney General and General Kelly, who is Trump's pick to lead Homeland Security, will be tomorrow. There's a big brouhaha about whether these are too rushed. Let's get to that one in a moment. We'll take a quick break here for underwriting. The email address is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Halfway through a Roundtable panel, Ray in for Joe today with Libby Post, Alan Chartok, and Teresa Bourgeois. The hearings on Donald Trump administration nominees are scheduled to begin tomorrow with testimony from Attorney General nominee Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama and from General John F. Kelly. Kelly is President-elect Trump's pick to lead Homeland Security. Several more hearings are scheduled for Wednesday, I think five, and some more later in the week. Republicans are defending their party against Democratic complaints that Congress is being forced to consider nominees for Donald Trump's administration without completed ethics reviews. Appearing on CBS Face the Nation, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell called the complaints procedural, saying they're driven by having not only lost the White House, but having lost the Senate. The Office of Government Ethics says in some cases it hasn't received even a draft financial disclosure report for some nominees appearing before Congress this week. In letters to Senators Chuck Schumer and Elizabeth Warren of New York and Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, the leaders of the Office of Government Ethics, that's Walter M. Schaub, Jr., said Friday, the announced hearing schedule for several nominees who have not completed the ethics review process is of great concern.
Well, first of all, there is a question that I have, and I think there's an indication that you do not have to do this ethics report. In other words, it's expected of you. You're supposed to do it. We've always had it done. But like with Donald Trump, they're going to say, oh, no, I don't really have to. Trump will say, I don't really have to divest myself. And the ethics people will say, no, you're supposed to do this. And they say, no, we're just not going to do it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Mitch McConnell wrote a letter to Harry Reid on February 12, 2009, detailing all the things that had to happen for the Obama nominations to go through. You know, every single step, there was eight steps that he wanted. And, you know, this is really important. This is what we need to do. We take our advice and consent responsibilities very seriously. And this is just one more example of them turning it all on their heads. I mean, you know, McConnell trying to make the Democrats look bad for holding up the nominations after 8 years of not doing anything, making Merrick Garland wait forever, you know, to become Supreme Court, not doing that nomination. They're hypocrites, but they're controlling the news cycle. And so they look like they're the ones who are right, and they have the facts behind them.
Well, the last Congress ended with more than 80 Obama appointments on hold because the Republicans held them up.
Right.
But I worked on this nomination process in the Senate when I worked there. And while you're right, Alan, it's not law. It is certainly practice.
Well, I know it's practice, right, and I'm for it. Right. I'm just simply saying I know what they're going to do.
Right.
They're going to say it isn't law, therefore, we're not doing it.
Right. And what the, I mean, let's step back and say, understand what the process is for. This hearing process is both to determine if people have potential conflicts, but it's also to discuss policy issues and to lay out, you know, a series of questions and issues on policy. And it begs the question of what are they so afraid of that they are not getting this paperwork done? Maybe it's just because it's complex. They have so many nominees who are not, who are outside
should
of government.
And should not be in government.
And who have questionable issues. And then why would they not want this opportunity to lay out their policy agenda? In some cases, you use these hearings, the incoming president uses these hearings to lay out their policy agendas.
Teresa, but in all due respect,
they're not doing
do you
that.
Believe in the tooth fairy? I mean, the reason that
what are they afraid of?
But it doesn't matter what they're afraid of. They just don't want to do it. They don't want to do it because they don't want to lay out their plans, because they haven't been told what their plans are going to be, or for any of those reasons. Right?
It's just like what happened in the election.
Sure.
You know, you're not focusing on policy. You're focusing on broad rhetoric, and you're getting into these side show
and you're being
debates.
Told by Kelly Conway and his other minions, you cannot criticize Donald Trump. You shouldn't do that. Right. It's bad for America. And that's an abridgment of our freedom of speech. And they don't take that very seriously unless they're the ones who are doing the speaking.
Right. And the other thing that's deeply concerning about this, you have five nominations on Wednesday. At the same time, you have possibly a Trump press conference, or at least the discussion of. So that jams up the news. And then Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has scheduled votes to begin repealing the Affordable Care Act on Wednesday. So this at the same time, these senators are going to have what they call a votorama, a whole series of votes to begin dismantling the Affordable Care Act with nothing to replace it. They need to be in these hearings reviewing these nominees. And I think back on Tom Daschle's former senator who I worked with. He was scheduled to be the head of Health and Human Services for Obama. It's Obama appointed.
Right.
And he ended up, after these hearings, he had to withdraw because he owed $125,000 in unpaid taxes over a series of years because he didn't properly pay taxes on for a driver. And now you think back.
That's like that child like, play
compared to what's going on. And there was outrage over that.
Mm-hmm.
And here you have Tom Price, the congressman, who has a range of conflicts of interest. It seems that he bought stock in certain healthcare companies while he was the chair of the committee that oversees those companies. And so anyway, interesting. We live in interesting times.
We do
but what to do about it? What to do about it, Alan?
Indeed. And let's find out from our listeners. The email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And I understand, Alan, that we may have a letter or two.
You're right. Gail says, I'm just tuning in. I think it's important that your panelists concentrate on mental health and mental health care in the U.S. today. I often say in discussions involving mental health, there's no system in our system. Haven't most of the mass shootings in our country been caused by somebody in a mental health crisis? Yes, maybe restricting types of gun might help, but there'll be a watch list for the mentally ill? Unlikely. No. And that's from Gail. Gail, we did talk about it at some length in the beginning of the program, which is why
you need
prohibited
to tune in.
No. Missing one second of this.
No, you need to tune
you can listen. You can listen online, right? After the show is done, you can always go.
But thank you for your observation.
You can put a radio in the toilet.
Some people do.
You can do all of that, or they make them for the shower now. You know that kind of thing. Tom says, "I'm shocked that a well-educated panel such as yours is going to the argument that guns are only okay for hunting. Does no one in this panel know the Constitution? Please read the Second Amendment and tell me where it says hunting and discuss why our founding fathers wanted this amendment." Well, we've done that many times, and we will do it again. Okay, John says,
yes.
In the immortal words of the late comic Bill Hicks, quote, the NRA would have you believe that having a gun and shooting someone with it and not having a gun and not shooting somebody had nothing to do with each other. And you are a fool and a communist to think otherwise. He was being facetious, of course.
Of course.
Natch.
Bill Hicks was funny.
Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Kellyanne Conway has more than once told us that we should listen to what is in Donald Trump's heart, thump, 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 rather than what comes out of his mouth. I like to hear the panel discuss what evidence exists for what's in his heart.
Well, how do you know what's in his heart?
That's why they invented a
stethoscope. I'm not sure he has one.
That's why they invented a stethoscope. Now stop that, Libby. How are we to know what is in his heart? What does that even mean? Keep up the great work, and that's Stephen from Brooklyn.
All right, Steve from Brooklyn?
Yep.
Well, all right.
A lot of people listening to us from all over the place.
Online.
And I invite them, by the way, to let us know. You know, it's a panel at WAMC.org.
Right.
And then
you can
go to
WAMC.org and listen or even watch this.
Yeah, if you're listening in New Caledonia, we'd like to hear from you.
Where's New Caledonia?
What?
Where's New Caledonia?
It must be
next
somewhere.
Next to Old Caledonia.
But, hey.
Well, okay, so Tony says, I don't think the Streep comments can appropriately be called bait. Somebody here said...
No, this tweet is the bait.
Yeah, he took the bait. He took the bait from her.
Oh, yeah.
You see, I don't believe that either. I think she's a woman of incredible courage.
Now, I didn't watch the show, but I don't think she was the only person to take a few shots.
Oh, no.
But she was incredibly eloquent.
Yes, she was.
She was respectful.
She was eloquent.
And she was eloquent.
And they panned to Vince Vaughn and Mel Gibson, and neither one of them were very happy at that moment. Because they both were supporters.
May I quote from her? I love this.
Okay.
Disrespect invites disrespect.
Yep.
Violence incites violence. When the powerful use their position to bully others, we all lose. Quote,
yeah.
Unquote.
Yeah. Yeah.
She never used his name, but everyone knew.
Yeah. Okay, and then we heard one more here.
All right, sir.
Dear panel, instead of blaming guns, why don't you blame the government for the needless wars that we have been fighting for the last 26 years, and as a result, 24 veterans who commit suicide every day. We are losing more soldiers here at home to suicide than to death in combat. What say you to that?
And the email address here is panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. You know what I have to do, Alan, is get
what?
You your own recycle bin.
Mm.
So when they're done,
right.
when Alan reads...
I don't have to hand them across the table.
Yeah, which is kind of ridiculous.
You know, it's sometimes the easy solutions or some of the most difficult problems are solved by very easy solutions.
Right.
And you're right. We get a blue bin right here next to me.
Yeah, I have one over here if you want it.
Dump them in.
Yeah. The thing is, in the old days on this program,
yeah.
You would read from an electronic device.
I did.
The problem with that is many other things would come in at the same time. It was very tough to filter that stuff out.
And it's called multitasking. So here comes Sarah LeDuc with a whole bunch of
stuff.
And the new system is we bring paper, recyclable paper in.
And we be sure to recycle.
And we recycle. And so here's another one.
So we're not killing the trees, we're replenishing them.
Well, the trees are dead, but we'll hopefully
kill less.
What word is of wisdom do I have in my
hand?
You have another one
in my hand.
1 minute here, so make it happen.
Beyond finding myself engaged yet again at Trump's response to Streep, I'm terrified that this behavior is continuing to be condoned by as many supporters. What values are these people teaching to their children? And thanks for all you do, and that's from Katie Rose from Lanesboro.
All right.
Okay, and Christopher says, when you broadcast Trump's juvenile tweets, you cataclysmically amplify his message, volume, and power over his followers, would blindly hang on every word. This technique of tweet and switch the focus is exactly how he won. His tweet should not be taken as newsworthy, and media outlets such as yours should not ignore them.
Should ignore them.
The truth of the matter is that's ridiculous. It's a nice letter, and I'm glad you wrote it. But the fact of the matter is we're not in the censorship business.
That's true.
This is a guy who's going to be the most powerful man in the world in a few days.
Okay, now.
And if he says something, especially if it's outrageous, we better say.
And he uses tweets to distract.
Do you think, and we have to go to a news break, do you think that once the 20th of January rolls around, the tweets will cease?
No.
No. People keep saying he's going to change. People don't change. Yeah, they say he's going to pivot and become presidential. This is not.
It's been working for him.
Right. It works for him. He's gotten people to, talk about this rather than
if
his conflicts of interest.
If he was going to pivot, he would have done it already.
This has gotten him elected.
Yeah.
The email address is panel@wamc.org. We will take a break for news from the affable Dave Gustina, and then we'll come back and we'll do more of this.
Affable?
It's the roundtable on WAMC. It's the panel at 7 minutes after 10 o'clock. Monday morning, a chilly one at that. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, who's staying warm, presumably. The panel today is Libby Post and Teresa Bourgeois and Alan Shartok, and of course you at home. You are the panelist without portfolio. The email address is panel@wamc.org. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo will deliver a State of the State address in New York City, one of six speeches planned for locations around the state this week. The Democratic governor will deliver his remarks at the World Trade Center today before traveling to Buffalo for a second speech. So he's picked the two most distant points in New York for one day, and then he'll do some other ones tomorrow. He'll be on Long Island, Westchester County, Syracuse, and Albany later in the week. Governors traditionally deliver the address to lawmakers at the state capitol, but Governor Cuomo's administration says this year's approach is an effort to communicate directly with New Yorkers. Top lawmakers are skipping
New Yorkers.
New Yorkers. Yeah, New York. Top lawmakers are skipping the speeches in a sign of a tense relationship between some lawmakers and the governor. Many lawmakers blame Governor Cuomo for killing their first pay raise in 18 years last month.
Well, first of all, you have to know something about him. Now, I have come under considerable criticism from Rosemary Armeo, who thinks I'm a little too hard on this governor. Nevertheless, he is a guy who does need to have enemies. And if it's not Tom DiNapoli that he's picking on, and if it's not, who else, there's always Eric Schneiderman. There's always somebody. I've always often explained it. If you're not me, you're no good. So there's that. So he's having this big fight with the legislature. The problem is he's right.
About the pay raises?
Well, he's right. He certainly was right about the pay raises. 70% of New Yorkers agree with him that they didn't deserve one. And I agree with that, too, unless they pass some meaningful ethics reform, which they will not do. So tough noogies. The answer is, you don't do what's right. That's what happens. So now there's this huge brawl going on between Cuomo and the legislature. And Cuomo is coming up with a whole bunch of things that make all kinds of sense. For example, we had a lot of mail on this the other day, which was any family under $125,000 a year, you go to school for free.
SUNY
or CUNY, which is a great idea. It's what I did, and I'm not going to say that I didn't see people around me who would never have gone.
No,
to
this was at Hunter when you went?
I went to Hunter.
So
were you going to say, isn't Hunter a girl's school?
No, I wasn't going to say that.
Okay.
No,
I once stopped by a cop. I had a Hunter thing on the back, and I went to Hunter in the Bronx, which at the time, now Lehman College, which was at the time both sexes. Mm-hmm. He said, you follow me to the police station. I said, why? He says, this car is not yours. I said, well, how come it says Hunter on the back? I'll never forget it. But anyway, it was a great school, and it was a great education, and a lot of people got educated who wouldn't have. So he put that out there, and it's brilliant because not only do the very poor who get TAP, tuition assistance program money, now you're getting the middle class who've been griping all these years that they were left out and that their kids had debt and that the poorest kids didn't. This is a brilliant move, and he's doing that. Now, what does he come up with yesterday? He comes up with a fairer voting package in New York State. Same-day registration, as you've just heard on our news, same-day registration same-day voting, and it's all good. It's all good because everybody needs to vote. We have less than half the people in this country vote in elections, a little more than half the people, I believe. Voted elections, including the presidential election, which is the biggest turnout of all. So these are all good ideas. He's going to go around and do them. On the other hand, he is deprecating the legislature, and boy, there's going to be a fight.
By not appearing at the Capitol for the State of the State?
Sure. Yeah. This is when they bring their kids. And
the thing is that they said, they put out the first salvo and said, we're not coming. We're not going down to the convention center. We're going to watch it from the chamber on our phones and our tablets. And after that, because of the whole pay raise thing. After that, that's when he said, okay, fine, I'll just go someplace else, and I'm going to do it six places around the state. And so,
well,
That's how it all played out, Alan.
It started a little earlier than even you say. He moved it out of the prestigious assembly chamber, and he moved
it down. Well, a long time ago.
I haven't finished yet.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All
right, I haven't quite finished yet.
And they moved a deep breath.
And he moved it down to that hall down there.
Right.
And then he started being real cute and playing, showing pictures of Shelley in short pants and on an airplane. I remember all of that stuff. So don't start with me that they weren't going to go down to that chamber. That was never right in the first place. We have an assembly and a Senate chamber, and that's where it should have been. And they were right about that.
Well, that's all well and good. The fact of the matter is that when this just recently they all said because of the pay raise issue they weren't going to go to the state of the state, they were going to watch it in the chamber, and right after that he said, okay, I won't even do it at the state, I'm going to do it six places around New York, Syracuse, Long Island. He's doing it up at the Performing Arts Center up at SUNY Albany. What's nice is that he is highlighting some of the SUNY schools, which is lovely.
Well, I'm so sorry, Teresa, go ahead.
Well, I'm fascinated by this in the context of what's going on nationally. And I know there's this local food fight with the legislature and such. But here, you know, you think about what's going on in California, where Governor Brown is really taking a stand and laying out a vision for how the states are going to take some leadership in opposition to the Trump administration. And you have a whole host of folks in California who are running for governor who are positioning themselves to do the same. You have the attorneys general, state attorney general's positioning himself. And I would have thought that Governor Cuomo would have used this state of the state speech as an opportunity to lay out a vision of how New York State was going to be a leader in the midst of all this change we're seeing at the national level, and, you know, basically be an incubator for innovation and being a barrier against some of these changes that needed to protect the people. And that this, I'm surprised that he gave up this opportunity, you know, in because of all of these local fights, gave up an opportunity to really lay out a vision of leadership. And then you still go around the state and, you know, after the broad speech and you give these individual speech.
What you mean. Yeah.
You know, that's not
so
at all unusual.
You would have done the original one, but
lay out a big vision. Yeah. So set himself as a leader nationally. I mean, you see Eric Schneiderman certainly laying out a place for himself as a leader in dealing with what we're seeing nationally. And you see other governors doing the same. And I was really surprised that Governor Cuomo is not taking this opportunity to have the main speech, the ceremonial speech, to lay out a vision of the role that states can play in protecting average Americans, okay, and then go around the state. What do you think about that?
Well, I think your concept of laying out a vision is correct, and I think he'll do it. I think he's going to do it in these six speeches. And I think he sees this. Boy, he did not expect to be able to run the next time. And I do believe he's going to try. I think he's going to run.
For president?
Yes.
For governor?
No. He's going to run for governor in 18 and 20. He's going to run for president. I sat with him at one point, and he told me specifically there was no way. When I raised that with him, he said, there's no way that Hillary isn't going to have two terms. Well, there are two, is a way that she's going to have two terms. And right now, his name is on some people's lips for running for president. He's got to get through a gubernatorial election. He's got to get through a couple of trials, which are going to be potentially very embarrassing. But, Teresa, I think to your point, and I don't fool with your point about going a single speech, which would do that, but I think you're going to find him doing it in each of these six speeches, because it's the only way he gets to be president. He has to lay out that he is the opposition.
Right, but I think to miss this opportunity for that core ceremonial state of the state, and then you go around the state.
But doesn't that water down? In other words, if he is taking his directly to the people, so tapping into the populist sort of gestalt that going on now in this country, if he's taking his message directly to the people, if he lays it all out in one grand speech, who shows up for the six other ones?
Well, you lay down a marker. You know, think about the big speeches. His father had some memorable ones. Other people, Senator Kennedy, other people, you know, Reagan, people have had some really memorable speeches. You lay out a vision of what you see, you know, the state's role or his as a leader in the state. and the country what their role is, and then you go around the state and you flesh out all of the details of the various details of the programs. I would have thought that he would have done that, and that's just I'm going past the local, mm-hmm. what I call local. It's not local, but the internal squabble that you're talking about. I would think that he would step back and see that he had an opportunity that aside, but he didn't take that opportunity.
Well, but if he did the first speech, Teresa, and then he did six others, people would pay far less attention to the other six than if they had done they were covering just the original speech. And by the way, and I know this is just personal and I apologize for it, he ain't no Mario.
Right.
And he's never giving a speech. Never, ever giving a speech like his father. He can't do it.
And the other part of this is that him going to these far-flung places around the state, you know, and he can talk directly to the people there, I think, as Alan says, lays the groundwork for 2018. And he can talk specifically about major initiatives for those particular areas. And that's what people want to hear. I understand what you're saying with the grand thing. And it would be nice if that's what would happen.
Speech,
right.
Yeah.
But this is the reality that we're working with. You know, he made this decision. He's going to go do it at 60
I'm just surprised.
Places.
Yeah, I'm just surprised.
Well, his instincts almost always could be put into the following sentence. Put up your dukes. I mean, you know, this is a guy who likes to fight. He can't stop from fighting. I'm like that myself.
Indeed. I was thinking the same thing as you said that.
I beg your pardon.
You love a fight.
I beg
you
your
love
pardon.
A fight.
I beg your pardon.
You see, you're doing it now.
So I think his instincts are that they've taken me on, and here's what I'm going to do, and here's what you're going to do when you go out and say this, and I'll go out and say this, and that's the way it is. I'm the governor.
Thousands of people lined up in frigid temperatures hoping for tickets to President Obama's farewell speech in his hometown of Chicago over the weekend. Tickets were free, but you had to pick them up in person at the convention center along Lake Michigan. Obama plans to speak to supporters there tomorrow night, calling it a chance to say thank you for an amazing journey. I believe every president since Washington, in 1796, he gave a similar farewell address.
Well, Washington's farewell address is probably the most quoted address in history.
Yeah. And he's going to offer some thoughts of, quote, where we will go from here tomorrow night. That'll be on all the major networks. I don't know. Are we carrying that?
I don't know that. I'm not in charge of everything around here.
Really?
It's streaming live. You could.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what he does once he leaves. You know, at first they talked about working on redistricting, whether or not he's going to speak out on issues. Most of the time the president's sort of lay back. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not he's going to do the usual or if he's going to redefine what it is to be the immediate past president of the United States.
We shall see. I'm sure that there will be a couple of beers and some rounds of golf and relaxation first, right?
Some time in Hawaii.
And the email address here is panel@wamc.org. Alan, we have been remiss. We have let the pile get very high. So let's read a few emails.
It's piled higher and deeper.
Well played, old boy.
Okay, here we go. Elizabeth says, one of the most chilling things about the incoming administration has done is to deny the outgoing diplomats any leeway in leaving their posts. They cannot stay on until their replacements are confirmed. So their children can finish the school year. This shows a complete lack of something, of human empathy and utter lack of concern for the smooth management of the country. And that's from Elizabeth.
Okay.
And Bill in Kinderhook says the Republican mantra regarding NSA surveillance is you have nothing to fear if you have nothing to hide. Then why are the Republicans so afraid to have Trump's cabinet appointees' backgrounds be properly vetted?
Exactly.
If it takes time to thoroughly investigate these people, then it should be done. Thomas says, the right will defend the individual's Second Amendment right, absolutely. But when it comes to First Amendment rights, like Meryl Streep exercised last night, not so much. Karen says, Karen with a C. Hello, all. Oh.
Hi, Karen.
This is my first email to you. I look to WMC for my news every morning before work, and I now listen to your podcast. Love them. I love all of you and so appreciate your collective wisdom, humor, and bravery in reporting the truth. This weekend, I treated myself to a sustaining membership.
Oh, well done. Thank you.
Well, that's really great.
That's great.
Okay, Bill says, I very much enjoy Ray as host because he uses the music every day as a short lead-in only, and he keeps his topics on point and his thoughts concise. A very nice show today, says Bill.
That's very kind.
Okay. And Susan says, on the news this morning, an ethics expert who worked with George W. Bush stated that there is a law that states the nominees to cabinet position must be fully vetted before hearings on their appointment. And that's from Susan. No, I don't think that's correct. In other words, I think there's no such law. I think it's just the procedure and the process. But maybe I'm wrong about that, but I'm quite sure I'm right.
Well, unless she's talking about the Senate has an obligation to approve the nominees. So in that extent, there's a law. But there's no, I don't think there's a law that says you have to disclose your taxes or whatever. Yeah. It's a practice.
Jim says, I usually don't like award shows being used to make political statements, but what she said was right on and needs to be said off, and I applaud her coverage, and as usual, Trump's response is way off base. She's one of the greatest actresses of all time. I don't think anybody could deny that, by
correct.
The way.
And what was interesting about last night, and this goes to the letter about the Second Amendment versus the First, she said we need to support journalism and independent journalism and the Committee for Journalists, and I thought that was really... really good of her to do, and very important for people to hear nationally, because journalism is under attack when he keeps saying the crooked media, the lying media.
Sure.
Well, it was interesting. She said Hollywood, foreign press, Hollywood, the responsibility of Hollywood, and that we
foreigners
need to...
and the press.
So Samantha writes,
yes.
No complaint here over switching away from Ms. Streep. Frankly, I'm a little over it with celebrities spouting off about politics. It never accomplishes anything except perhaps to further exasperate conservatives over liberal tears. Otherwise, Hillary would have won with her star-studded crowd of endorsers. Movies, TV, and music are an opportunity for us to get away from all of this. Can't we have that moment?
But, Alan, don't you think entertainers can change and reflect the culture?
Yes. Mm. No, I do. I'm a big fan of Meryl Streep, so I think it took tremendous courage for her to get up there and to say it. And, by the way, there's a certain dichotomy about... some people who have used their education to help them learn about some of these things. I'm not going to go there right now, but I will at some point. The Second Amendment may not mention hunting, but it sure does mention a well-regulated militia. Which regulated militia was the shooter serving in? I like that a lot. That's great.
All right, one more.
Put this in a can.
Fine.
Okay, let's see. Should I use this one or should I use this
one? Oh, you can do two.
Should I use this one?
Let's make it snappy.
Only one more. Okay. Robert says, pray tell, how much is that boondoggle going to cost the taxpayers? Helicopter rides, state police escorts, vehicular support, etc. What a shame Mr. DiNapoli prevented the purchase of the luxury interior package police helicopter, huh? And that's Robert from the town of Wright. Right you are. Right, W-R-I-G-H-T. Okay.
Last one.
Get it? Stephen says, what a country needs, a petty, angry New Yorker of questionable ethics. Steve.
Well, that was fun. The panel is done, and I want to thank Libby and Teresa and Alan for being here.
This panel's toast.
And thank you all for listening and for weighing
warm
in.
Warm toast.
And if you want to keep emailing, the show's over, but go ahead if you want to. Panel at WAMC.org. The show's not over, but the panel's over. Coming up, another 90 minutes of Roundtable, and we'll be back.